Welcome to our session today called What Rising Stars Do. Our speakers are Tim Chester, Vice President for Information Technology at the University of Georgia, Mary Lou Goodyear, Assistant Vice Chancellor for Academic Program Development at the University of Kansas, and Sue Traxler, Assistant Vice Chancellor for Information Technology and CIO at the University of Wisconsin-Platteville. I'd like to remind you, please silence your cell phones, and it really helps the programming committee if you file a evaluation of the session online after. So take it away.
Thank you very much. So we also have online going on, so we'll get questions from our online participants as well. So I'd like to welcome them, as well as everybody in the room. I'm Mary Lou Goodyear from the University of Kansas. I have a background as a librarian and a CIO, but I am now doing faculty kinds of things. And so my role here will be to put some perspective on what management leadership research says about this topic. So I'm going to do a little bit of introduction, and then I'm going to let my co-participants here have a little bit of a conversation about rising stars. So I think one of the reasons why Tim wanted me to do this is that one of my research areas is mentoring. And so I'd like to summarize a little bit to you what I think mentoring, the new concept of mentoring means, and what the research tells us about its impact on careers. So the whole concept of mentor was kind of a senior person working with a junior person. That's kind of our traditional concept. But when researchers went out and actually interviewed people and didn't use the word mentor but said, how do you get help to improve on the job, or how do you get advice, or using kind of more broad questions, what they actually found out is that most people have a mentoring constellation. So they have multiple people that they turn to for different kinds of things. The other things that the researchers found out is that people who do have this kind of mentoring group that helps them in their career, people who report that they do that make more money than people who don't. They get promoted faster than people who don't. And a very interesting finding from the research, I think, is that those individuals tend to stay in one organization longer than people who don't have those kind of mentoring relationships. And the researchers think part of that is because with the mentoring relationships kind of developing within that organization, it makes it harder for someone to leave and go somewhere else because they're more grounded in that organization. So I thought those were kind of interesting results to put out there on the table, because I think what we've seen in the careers of the rising stars who've gotten that award so far is very much developing that informal network around themselves to move forward. So the other thing I just wanted to briefly talk about from a research perspective is that there have been about 30,000 pieces of literature out there about motivation. And I'm going to talk about them all. No, I'm not. But it all boils down to a very succinct concept about motivation, which is all of us, no matter what sector we're in, and almost no matter what job we're in, we are motivated by purpose. We are motivated by making a difference in an organization and making a difference in the lives of other people. And that we really intrinsically have a motivation to be competent at something and to help with something. And I can tell you that I see that in my four-year-old granddaughter, who, with having just eaten a chocolate bar, wants to come help me take clean dishes out of the dishwasher. She is motivated to be competent at that, and she's motivated to help Grammy Lou, right? You see that in very young children. And I think that's a very key piece to moving people's careers forward, is to understand what we bring to the table intrinsically when we think about these kinds of issues. So now I'm going to ask some questions of my co-participants here. And our first question is, I'd like them to bounce back and forth a little bit about the characteristics of a rising star.
Okay, again, my name is Sue Traxler, and this past year I've had the opportunity to serve as the chair for the EDUCAUSE Recognition Committee, and Tim did so last year. And so one of the features that I think I look for in rising stars when I look at the application process are an individual's ability to both inspire and motivate others. So to me, that's one very important attribute. When we take a look at a leader's ability, they need to be engaged and they need to inspire the others around them within their organization or across other organizations outside of their institution. I look for someone who can inspire their team or colleagues and those that have a vision for successes to come, someone that makes themselves feel invested in the accomplishments of their organization or their group. And I think a leader needs to be able to inspire their team to focus on the future goals as well as some of the current issues that are going on. When you look at the work that we do buried deep and we get involved with the work of our areas or our departments and our work units, I think sometimes morale can be low or energy levels can be fading, and it's important that a leader can recognize everyone's needs and work with each of them. It's also important, I think, that a rising star can acknowledge the work that everyone brings to a unit and commend the team or each other for those efforts. So it's all about keeping spirits up, I think, and showing an appreciation for that hard work. And then I think lastly, in the category of ability to inspire, I include that they need to lead by, they don't tell people what to do, but rather they cause people to want to be helpful or to help them. And that's a key part, I think, of cultivating your own desire to help others. When others sense that you want to help them, they're more apt to want, in turn, to help you. So I think that was the first one. So, Tim?
And I'll just add that. Is Keith McIntosh in the room? Keith, you here? Okay, Keith was our first award winner for the Rising Star Award 3 years ago. And I'll just, with Sue's comments, if I need to get pumped about what's going on, you know, with my job or something like that, I go to Keith's Twitter feed. You know, this is a guy that really, really cares, and he really cares about impacting others in a very, very positive way. And you see that with what he puts out there in the social media, on Twitter, and as well as on his LinkedIn profile. And I would say the same for Melissa Wu as mm-hmm. well. Melissa's been a really fun person to watch as her career, and she was someone who, you know, 3 years ago was very open about she was looking for that first CIO job. And, you know, watching her just, again, as Sue described, very, very positive way, in a very inspiring way, reaching out and working with other people, I think really typifies why, you know, they were both identified as rising stars.
Absolutely.
Let me grow, and I'm going to take a more operational focus, I think, on my kind of comments, where Sue is more strategic and more kind of a leadership thing. But, you know, as I step back and think about, you know, my own career advancement and what was really important and the things that helped me, you know, take some of those steps, and then kind of overlay that with what I've seen with the candidates that we've selected for these awards. I mean, there's one common theme, and these are people that others in higher education count on to get some really important things done. You know, there's that old saying that, you know, you need to have a reputation for making the trains run on time. And I think rising stars certainly are individuals that others within their institution are going to count on to get some very, very difficult things done. And sometimes that's on the engineering side, sometimes that's on an operations side, but many times that's on the people side. And that's where the real, real, real tough work is often done. And here's the thing about successful career advancement. Odds are it happens, you know, we tend to think it happens with people moving from institution or jumping from job to job, but the sign of a rising star is that they're given progressively more difficult things to do, even if they're not actually swapping their job out. I mean, these are the people that when we say we've got a really, really tough job that we have to get done, who can we put in the mix and we know we'll get that job done and do a very, very good job and in fulfilling this need that we have as an organization. Those are our rising stars. I mean, and if you're a rising star, one of the ways you can tell that is, are you getting rewarded with more and more difficult things to do? you know, and being the individual that cultivates that reputation in among your peers and those that you collaborate with as being the person who can get things done is absolutely, absolutely critical. You know, I've got an organization of 240 people that report to me. Frankly speaking, you know, there are five or six people near the top of that organization who I know are my go-to people, and they are the people that I can hand stuff off. So as you think about career advancement, rising star, how you want to position yourself either for career success or for an award like that, just kind of cultivate that reputation as being the person that your leaders, your colleagues want to invite to the table, because you're someone who's going to add value or you're going to be someone who gets something done. You know, and at the end of the day, the rewards that come from that is that you get asked to do more and more interesting things and, frankly, more and more difficult things, and you're not afraid to take that on.
It's that person that's invited to each of the search committees that come up or to committee meetings, and sometimes they might wonder, I'm not sure I want to tackle more, but you're absolutely right, Tim.
Yeah.
It makes a difference.
So, absolutely.
Yeah. So my second bullet was having a vision and being politically strategic. So a person that has a vision is an individual that's working towards a goal that's greater than his or herself. And that can be something small, like the success of a team or a project, but it also can be a larger vision, like an IT strategic plan for the campus. I think working towards that vision is far more inspiring than working just towards a personal gain. It's important that leaders are strategic in how they approach relationships and building a consensus towards solutions across their campus, engaging those campus stakeholders in putting together a plan for implementation, and above all, making sure that you're a good listener. And I think that's very important. So I've been at the University of Wisconsin-Platteville for about 5 months now. I transitioned in May. And I came in clearly having a goal in wanting to develop what my leadership and my vision was. I started by meeting with about 50 individuals across campus. I met with every IT professional in my organization. And then I started to really engage and be a communicator across campus, started to pull together and formulate what that vision was going to look like that I then am now rolling out to IT and to the campus. And I would say, you know, my four concrete strategic campus projects on my campus or at my institution this upcoming year end up being refocusing on IT governance, project management, changing our student or our support model for the campus, and then developing that IT strategic plan. But that doesn't happen overnight. That happens with really having a vision or an idea, and also then being strategic about how you're partnering across campus with individuals at all levels, not just your leadership, but also your faculty. And so, again, I think that bullet is very important as we're looking at future leaders.
Absolutely. And I think one of the sweet spots around being politically savvy, both on the, again, complex people-centered issues and around service delivery, but at the same time, being really strategic thinking about, as you're asked to do more and more and more because of this reputation that you've cultivated for yourself, you are going to have to be very, very savvy about which of those opportunities you choose to take on and which ones that, frankly, you choose not to take on. I mean, I have a saying that most of the folks who work with me know that I think some of the more important decisions that we make around service delivery, or the choices that we make to do some or to not do some things, or the most important choices that we'll make are the choices to not do some things. And that takes a certain amount of political savvy, and that takes an engagement with people, because many times what you have to do is not simply just make a decision, but you've got to negotiate your way to being actually able to make those decisions. And most of the hardest things that we have to deal with around IT service delivery are very, very complex people-centered negotiations. And you've got to get in there and just commit to the relationship and working that relationship and that negotiation until you get to a mutually agreeable kind of satisfactory point. I'll give you an example of that. I mean, we're doing ERP implementation at the University of Georgia right now. And, you know, University of Georgia is $1.5 billion enterprise with 10,000 employees. Let me tell you what, we bought into this. Let's do this plain vanilla and see how far that gets us. But anybody who's done this know what that actually looks like in reality. We're having some tough, complex negotiations around choices that we're making. And the more often we're actually in the room with each other and having that conversation, the better off we are in actually solving some of those problems. And so being very people focused and being very savvy about how to manage those relationships, I think is absolutely critical. My next point that I've got on this, for me, is I think about, again, working in an institution and trying to provide value to students, faculty, and administration of an institution. One of the things that I have already seen among individuals who are just having super careers is that they're able to be really kind of bilingual. They are able to understand the world of IT so that they can add values when they're among the geeks and talking about operations and have their hands in the middle of the minutiae of service delivery. But at the same time, they can demystify that world to people who aren't engineers. You know, so being able to speak the language of people while at the same time being able to understand and speak the language of engineering and operations in some way puts you in a position where you're not siloed off from other people. You're able actually to engage in lots of other conversations with lots of different colleagues around the opportunities and challenges that we are. So, again, a lot of us come from an engineering background. I come from an engineering background. I was an entry-level programmer. That's how I started my career in IT. But being able to sit down with someone who's not an engineer and have a meaningful conversation about a solution and an opportunity and a challenge so that they understand it from their perspective is a huge, hugely important skill, because you've got some versatility there that, again, allows you to be plugged into different circumstances and different challenges, and you can engage that problem or that opportunity in ways that brings people around a solution as opposed to kind of the silos that tend to contribute to a lot of the problems that we have in IT. So my second point to share with you is I think about rising stars and advancing careers and being successful. Being able to navigate and be successful in both the worlds of IT as well as the worlds of people, I think, is a really, really important competency.
So I think of being that communicator, that bridge builder, when Tim talks about that. I think that was a key feature that I, or attribute that I brought to my most recent employer as mm-hmm. they were looking for this new CIO to come in and help their institution. They were clearly not looking for a techie person. Not that I don't have a technical background, but they were looking for that communicator. So mm-hmm. my rising up the ranks as a help desk administrator and mm-hmm. as a trainer really brought a different perspective to the position than what somebody did if they had been rising the ranks as a programmer. Absolutely. You might still have those skill sets, but again, it's being able to translate that I think is important that Tim said.
Yeah. So. And I think I'll just add, you know, as technology evolves, it's getting easier to administer. Now, we've got legacy issues, and that's a whole other thing. But, I mean, I think as careers advance, as technology has evolved as well, that creates opportunities to become more solution-focused around technology as opposed to successful with just the delivery of technology.
So my next bullet is commitment. And so I think that it's really important that leaders have a strong commitment to serve others as well as being engaged. And so by engagement, I think of being engaged both in their organization, being engaged in organizations outside of their institution, including higher education, maybe it's in the corporate world, but being engaged in their community too. This includes, you know, various committees that we talked about before. This might be search committees, this might be college council, et cetera. And I think looking at various jobs within the organization. So has a person been plugged in and tried different opportunities and they then are able to bring a different perspective to the table as a rising star. So being, again, involved in EDUCAUSE, presentations, are they engaged? And when I look at applications for the Rising Star Award, if a person's been job hopping every single year at different institutions, to me that's a red flag. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean that they're not a rising star, but it's something that I take into consideration when I take a look at those resumes. And probably more so than I do when an individual maybe has worked a year or two at a position at their same institution mm-hmm. and then taken on new or additional opportunity or responsibility. So again, that commitment I think is really important, Tim.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, many times we look at people who are engaged in a lot of things, and you can kind of take a really cynical view that people are just resume building and add a few notches and stuff like that. I mean, what it really is about is trying to identify people who are engaged in trying to stretch themselves a little bit. And external opportunities, whether we're talking about EDUCAUSE or we're talking about something in your community or we're talking about some type of service opportunity through your institution, is about people taking advantage of this moment where they can actually stretch themselves a little bit. They learn something a little bit different. They go beyond what they normally do, the normal routine. They're not just kind of stuck in that normal routine doing the same old, same old. They're looking to grow. And that growth is how rising stars actually begin rising, because they're always looking for something new to learn. They're looking for a bigger challenge to actually take on. And at the same time, that growth is developing them personally and professionally in ways that allow them to have a broader and deeper impact as time goes on. So I think that commitment to growth and that commitment to stretching themselves, I think, comes through the applications that we've looked at the last few years for the award winners. My next bullet point that I've got here is refuses to compromise on the quality of services provided to students and faculty. I mean, I think ultimately the rising stars really bring to the table this understanding that we are in the service delivery business to positively impact the lives of students and faculty and staff on our campus. And you know, I have a saying that I use with some people when just describing the nature of the IT business and service delivery. You know, water pipes burst. You know, we're in a tough business, and yes, sometimes we have problems that we create ourselves because we don't follow good change management practices or we don't actually test something for we do. And we've got all these kind of human-created problems. But at the same time, water pipes burst, you know, and we're all plagued with challenges around being overcommitted and not having all the resources that we need to be successful, and that leads to all types of problems. And rising stars really have that sense of commitment to students and faculty and staff on their campuses. And when the water pipes break, we treat it as something that's very, very important. We focus on resolving the service delivery issue because ultimately we're there to serve the academic enterprise. We're there to help faculty teach and to help students learn. And even though we have hiccups from time to time, and this is a tough business that we're all in, at the same time, we never let the challenges of that business become routine to the degree that we simply kind of roll our eyes and, yes, it's this the way it is, and we'll get there. There's a huge commitment to service and serving students and faculty, I think, in the winners of this award that we've seen in the past.
So my last bullet for this topic is being a well-rounded individual, I think, is very important. I mean, we do appreciate, I think, people having degrees, but I don't look to see what degree or to what level of degree have they furthered their education. I rather take a look at when I look at their resume and their reference letters, I look to see that the applicant's working towards a goal that's greater than themselves, like I mentioned before. I look that the entire information that's submitted on the application process and in the letters that their references are writing about them, to see that that individual is engaged in a number of areas in their life and on their campus. Are they, again, as we mentioned before, are they engaged in campus activities? Are they on committees? Are they in organizations? Are they involved in EDUCAUSE? Do they step out of their comfort zone and do a presentation, whether it's like this or being part of a committee? This morning, for the first time, I read off of a teleprompt, stepping out of your comfort zone a little bit. So, yes, I think that's important. Are they engaged also, and by well-roundedness, I also think, are they engaged outside of their institution? Are they a Boy Scout leader? Are they a volunteer person in the community? Do they have charities that they work for? And not that we always put all of those things on your resume, but they come out in reference letters or they come out in bullets on some people's resume. I think the longer you've worked in your life or in higher ed, the longer that resume gets and you start to par that resume down and take some things off. But if you're a rising star, you likely don't have quite as long of a resume, and then those things are important to put on there. And I appreciate and I look for those because, again, we're looking at that well-rounded individual, that person that is plugged in and is a leader in not just their work life, but their work and their home life. And I think I saw that very clearly the last couple of years that when we were looking at our rising star applicant pool. Those that were nominated, as well as especially those that we selected, were well-rounded individuals. They were very engaged in both their institution as well as their communities. So I think that's a great one. Yeah.
And mine is kind of a summary point here at the end of this part of our conversation. I mean, I think rising stars have the patience of a saint, and they certainly understand that forging consensus around opportunities and challenges that we have in higher education many, many times is going to be much more important than expediency. And I'm not naturally a patient person, and I don't think that may surprise too many of you, but you know, at the end of the day, one of the most important things that I do each and every day when I go to work is to really demonstrate that patience, because we've got a lot of complex challenges, not only around just IT, but in higher education, we've got a lot of challenges that are really, really, really big. And rising stars know that when we bring people together around those challenges, we improve our batting average. The solutions that will come up by working together and collaborating with one another will be better than if they came up in isolation. So the patience that's required to really, really focus and bring people together around how we respond and making sure that we're striving to bring as many people in on the solution to the problem is a really, really important trait. Now, one of our Rising Star Award winners, our last year's winner, Melissa Wu, she became a CIO after she had actually won the award. And one of the things that just kind of really struck me about her starting her career is just the show that she made around campus that she described to me about sitting down and just patiently collecting a lot of data and having a lot of conversations. Now, certainly as she began her career as a CIO, that was helpful to her to understand kind of the gaps and challenges and where she needed to begin thinking about leading the organization. But at the same time, it helped her begin patiently building those relationships that she's going to have to call on later as she takes on some big projects, as she has to deal with the fact that we don't have all the resources that may be necessary to do a project, or whatever the challenge of the day may be. She's been patient enough, and she's been deliberate enough to really focus on building the relationship so that she can call on those relationships as necessary to respond to challenges or opportunity that are going to come up day to day.
I think building those relationships are so important. I'm just thinking back a couple of weeks ago, and as I was meeting with campus constituents in my new place of employment, mm-hmm. and I don't think those bridges were built before, and so some of those conversations that I had, the individuals were like, wow, you're really coming out and meeting with me? We're really talking? That's wonderful. And then you can draw on that later. So then when there was a crisis a couple weeks later, yeah. You could go back to that relationship and say, hey, Angela, you know, I realize that we have this bump in the mm-hmm. road, mm-hmm. but know that I'm still committed to making your part of the organization successful. And so I think that's really key.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. Thanks, Tim. Yeah.
That's great.
That's our list.
So I'm going to press these two on one point a little bit more. It seems like to me that potentially the difference between a rising star and a falling star are being able to evaluate risk. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're a person that's going to take on a challenge, mm-hmm. you need to make sure that you have some opportunity calculated risk of being successful, right? Or you know if failure is an option, mm-hmm. that you know how you're going to deal with that, and you know how that situation is going to play out a little bit. So I'd like to ask Sue mm-hmm. and Tim to talk a little bit about how they do that. How do they think about challenges and risk?
I'll start.
Go ahead.
Okay. I think that's a really important attribute. I can't say it's easy. So I am a semi-risk taker. I would say that I am happy to make a decision and to take a risk. I think having that ability to make a decision and take a risk is really important in a rising star. If they're not able to take that risk, they're often not able to move that institution forward or that project forward. And so I noticed in my transition this summer, it's sometimes for those individuals that are not currently a leader in their organization, it's hard for them to make that decision. Well, if we make this decision, something bad can happen. And again, that's part of taking that risk. You weigh the odds. If we do plan A, this is what might happen. If we do plan B, this is what might happen. And you'd make the best informed decision that you can based upon the data that you know. And you, again, draw upon those in your organization that have the knowledge. And then you're taking that risk to make that decision. So It's not always easy. You're absolutely right. So,
yeah. It may have actually have been Keith McIntosh that I saw this on Twitter, not on Twitter, I'm sorry, on LinkedIn a month ago. But there was this great kind of graph that had, you know, it was a kind of a split screen thing where on the left side it said, here's how we think success happens. And it was a fork in the road and somebody went down the right path and that's where success was. And then the other side was failure. But that's not how it was. So the other side of this graph was, you know, you take a path from failure to failure to failure to failure, and then finally you learn enough to actually reach success. And that's what success often looks like, is we've built upon, you know, not always having all the success that we wanted, or creating a lot of problems as we've explored or we've innovated. I mean, ultimately, you know, failure is a big part of the process of innovation, and innovation is a big part of what we need to be doing as campus leaders. And that's what rising stars do. So I think the thing I would add to that is there's a degree of savviness and understanding risk and diving deep and making fully informed choices. And then there's just a natural part that says, we're going to assume some risk. And, you know, if this thing doesn't go as well as we'd like, it's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. And the world is not going to end. And I think to some degree you have to be something that develops through just experience over time, where you understand there's a line to where you continue to go forward. And then there's a line when you say, we're going to shift gears and it's okay. And I've always just tried to be someone who I am not afraid to shift gears and say, we were wrong or we got it wrong, when proven that we got it wrong. And sometimes you make that decision intuitively when things aren't working out. But there's a calculated part of just saying, we'll accept some risk and we'll shift gears a little bit later. And then there's this whole people-oriented part about educating a president or a provost who perhaps is a little bit more risk-averse, that's what success actually looks like. So you've got to have that kind of conversation as well, and you've got to create some context about the risk that you're choosing to take, so that everyone understands, you know, this is how the process plays itself out.
So one of the things that you both talked about a lot is communication, and I'm not sure you used the word trust, but that was mm-hmm. in my head a lot, mm-hmm. building trust. And just one of the things I have always found useful is Stephen Covey's concept of the emotional bank account.
Yeah.
And his concept is that as you have these kinds of conversations and build trust, you're building that emotional bank account. And then if something goes wrong, you're going to have withdrawals from that, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But if you've built that that balance up good, you can afford to take a few withdrawals. And so one of the things I've been incorporating into some of my consulting is to ask the IT organization to figure out what is the shape of your emotional bank account with your campus.
Yeah.
You know, have mm-hmm. you built up that trusting atmosphere so when the pipes break and those other things, mm-hmm. you know, you can kind of afford to take those kind of hits. So I would just lay that out there as another concept to kind of play with.
And I'll just add right briefly, I mean, I think that's great. And I think one of the best ways to help add to that account is when you screwed up. Just say you screwed up. Yep. Or even when you don't think you screwed up, that water pipe burst, just say you're sorry. I mean, this was another business unit on campus at the University of Georgia that had a major service delivery problem this year that impacted most employees. And they just struggled to say, we're sorry. And it was just like, just say you're sorry. Nobody's going to lash at you with a noodle or something if you assume responsibility for this. And yes, I understand some vendor did this and it wasn't that. But just say, we deeply regret this happened to you. And we're sorry and we're going to learn from it.
And I would say not just say you're sorry. It's not about admitting, but it's also about communicating.
Yeah.
Make sure that you're clearly communicating that you're sorry, or that this is that we are going to plan B if that's the case. But
absolutely.
To me, it's communication along with that.
Absolutely. Excellent.
So that kind of leads nicely into talking about positive impact on the institution that Rising Stars have. So I'll ask Sue and Tim to talk about that.
Okay. So having a positive impact on your institution is one of the key attributes that we look for in a Rising Star application for the EDUCAUSE Rising Star Award. And I think it's a very important attribute amongst anybody, whether they're applying for that award or whether they are working at their institution. I think that those individuals sustain a positive impact to their campus. They are doing things and leading from various different levels across their organization, like we mentioned before. And it's not just about a person's title. It doesn't mean that they have to have deputy CIO or assistant director in their title. It might be that they are leading a significant innovation at their institution. It might be that they are rolling out a new support model for their campus, for a new center of innovation. Any of these areas are examples of how an individual might be having a positive impact on their campus or at their institution. It's the different ways that a person is valued to their institution. Having that positive impact, I think, is very important.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think, you know, as I've read these application portfolios for the last 3 years, I mean, you know, as I've read the letters and things like that, I mean, really looking for that impact of on the institution comes out through those materials. And, you know, you can read, you can tell the difference between a letter that's, you know, some form letter that somebody typed out really quickly, something like that, and then you can tell the difference between that and just a really powerful narrative about how someone went above and beyond, or how someone took some risk, or how someone brought some people together to respond to a challenge that nobody else thought was really, really possible, comes through, you know, in those materials that get submitted. So as you think about either nominating somebody or actually working with some other folks to support your own application, stories of about, you know, positive impacts on people is really, really a powerful way. And sometimes for me, that's actually more interesting and helpful than just the standard, you know, 300-word letter from a president that, frankly, their speechwriter probably wrote. You know, so the stories that get told through the materials, I think, are very, very, very important.
Great, thank you. So I think we'll take some questions now. We'd like for you to use the microphones if you could, and we might have some questions from our online participants.
Hi, everybody. My name is Veronica. I'm the moderator representing the virtual audience, and we just have one question. It was for Tim, probably. How do you go about discovering and uncovering the hidden gems to grow into roles?
Yeah, I think you just have to get out of the office and get with the people. One of the constraints that we've got in Georgia, just because we're so close to the greater Atlanta market, is just supply and demand for good IT talent is incredibly out of whack. You know, so we have really adopted the philosophy of we're going to try to get them early in their career, and we're going to grow them strong by investing in them and hope we keep them as long as we can. And many of them will choose to stay, and many will choose to to advance your career. One of the things I've done this semester, which I was hoping to actually teach, and then that opportunity fell apart, and it was just like I've got to get out and do something with real folks for a while, is I put together a book club. And we're reading Gene Kim's The Phoenix Project, which is, you've never read that book, that's a great book. You know, Gene's an ITIL guy, so it's a piece of fiction about a really screwed up project, how they used ITIL to resolve the problems. But I've got four departmental IT managers that report to our deans, together with four mid-managers from my organization, and every 2 weeks we go through five or six chapters of that book over lunch. And I just use that as an example of just getting out there and just having conversations with folks. And you know, they love it because I'll always start out with, you know, a 2-minute view of what's been going on in my life and share some things that are going on at the university level. And then we talk about their problems. And the thing that the real payoff has been, though, you know, at Georgia, we're outnumbered 2-1. There are 2 decentralized IT staff for every 1 centralized IT staff. This has brought those staff together to understand we're all in the IT business. It's a pretty tough business. And I think it's helped us to build some bridges that's cut down on the natural finger pointing that happens between central and decentralized IT when services aren't going as well as we'd like. So I think just getting out and investing in your folks by spending a lot of time with them is one of the best things you can do.
I guess I would add to that, when I was CIO at University of Kansas, we did a lot of competing with Sprint for employees. And I think what I found really paralleled what Daniel Pink has in his several of his books. He spoke at EDUCAUSE a few years ago. He talks about 3 key factors: autonomy, mastery, and purpose in his book. And that's definitely what I found I could compete with. If I gave people a really interesting job, if I let them do it have a lot of autonomy on how to accomplish that particular task. And if I then made sure that they understood the impact they were having on the University of Kansas, those three things seem to really work at keeping people saying no to the $10,000 raise that they would get when they went to Sprint. And I really think we have a lot to offer in higher education in enriching jobs that are much more fun and interesting and rewarding than some other the other sectors.
That's excellent. Absolutely.
Thank you. I'm enjoying your talk so far. So far, what I'm hearing is the skills of the rising stars are to have certainly the IT background in some capacity, as well as the people skills. But for folks in your positions, can you speak for having a financial background, because you would need to assess your organization to move toward transforming, and how do you understand the financial numbers to present so that you are given funding? Can you speak of your experiences and what level of engagement you have?
I'll start. I do think giving individuals an opportunity to manage a budget, starting with a smaller budget, and as they grow their experience, extending that is a good opportunity to give you some of that exposure. I did that at my last institution, and I think that does develop individuals in having a view of that larger picture. So providing as much transparency as you can around that budgeting process helps gain that experience being stronger financially, both with their skill set as well as make sure that their organization is strong financially. And so I would say just experience with a smaller budget and then growing that experience, and that helps develop and build on additional experience. Mm-hmm. And you might add something,
yeah.
Tim.
I think, you know, the question presumes that we have budgets left, which is,
yeah, okay.
You know, a pretty big assumption. I mean, I think this goes for all facets. I mean, you have to know enough to frankly know that you're not being given a snow job about something, whether that's an engineering problem or whether that's a financial problem, because particularly if you're going to aspire to a job where a unit head, where you've got some type of responsibility to the institution around the budget numbers, regardless of who is responsible for doing those things in your unit, your signature's on the line. You're responsible, so you better know enough to be able to trust what you've got. And you know, I know a lot of successful CIOs. Some that are engineers, some that are planners, some that are finance people, and they've developed enough to be able to have meaningful conversations with their direct reports, who manage all of those areas. But they don't have to be an expert in all of those areas. But they absolutely got to have a relationship of trust and respect with all of those folks. And again, that is something that absolutely develops over time. So, you know, I think we all have our depth areas, and then we also have the need to be well-rounded. But what makes it work at the end of the day is not which one of those fields you've chosen to specialize in, but how have you developed relationships of trust and respect as a part of a holistic team that manages all of those areas. And experience is very helpful in doing that.
I definitely think you have to have the analytical skill sets, the spreadsheet skill sets, but I think the skill set that I see often in younger folks that makes me think they're going to be a rising star really is the ability to look at money and budgets as a priority setting process and being able to engage very effectively in that. One of the rules I had when I was CIO at University of Kansas is that if anybody asks for money, if whatever they were asking for costs less than $36 million, the answer could not be, we don't have money for that. Because $36 million was our budget. So clearly we do have money for that, right? Mm-hmm. Nobody asked for anything that expensive. So the answer couldn't be, we don't have money for that. The answer had to be, interesting idea. What would we cut in order to engage in that? Which then starts a conversation about priorities of the organization, our mission, our vision, and all of that. And I've seen a lot of people with great analytical skill sets, but really can't engage in that next step of really taking a look at how those decisions translate into priorities and being able to be interpersonally effective in those kinds of priority discussions, I think is... It's a really important aspect of things. And Tim said something a few minutes ago I would just kind of emphasize. I think it's very compelling to have data, but it's also very compelling to have story. And so many times I've seen in higher education institutions, it's the story that wins out, getting the money allocated, right? Yeah. And part of what we have to recognize, I think, is that higher education leaders are not trained managers. I have a little speech I've given at KU called Run by Amateurs. We are not, we do not have institutions that are run by, generally, there are a few MBA provosts and presidents, but generally they're not trained decision makers in a very analytical way. And so a lot of times the way you need to approach them is thinking about how they make decisions from their disciplinary perspective. And how do you influence that? And often I think that's much more in story than it is. Yes. You definitely got to have all that data and projects well thought out, but I think it's often in story. So,
I have another one from the audience. It seems like a lot of the skills are aimed at the CIO. What can a non-CIO do to either enable those people or be a rising star in a non-CIO role?
Yeah, I mean, I think, let me just jump into here first. I mean, as this award has been developed, we've had that debate about, you know, does this, is this people who are on the CIO track, or is it for people who are actually smarter and more intelligent than that? And so in the last 2 years particularly, we've said we need to really, really stress that this is not the rising star of the CIO kind of award. And, you know, hopefully, if that's not coming out, you know, we need to continue to work on that. This is about people who impact others at their institution for the good of students, faculty, and staff. And they do that by exhibiting all of the different competencies that we've talked about for the last 45 minutes. But, you know, particularly at the University of Georgia, you know, most of the more meaningful work is not done out of the Office of the Vice President for Information Technology. It's done at all other levels of the institution. And our job, particularly as a leader, is to make sure the culture and context is right so that other people can do that good work. So please, you know, don't read into this. This is the CIO in waiting award, because it's not intended to be that.
I just would agree with that. And I would say, just because the first two recipients happen to move on to a CIO role, again, doesn't mean that future recipients or the existing recipients this year necessarily want to do that. We don't know that. Again, most of the attributes that we talked about, I think, are useful at all levels of our organizations, not just at that individual that might be aspiring to a CIO role. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely.
About done.
Great. We have one more from online.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
We had an audience member ask what the illustration was that you referenced, the Path to Success illustration that you talked about.
If you'll email me, I'll find that graph. It was just something I ran into on LinkedIn, which was just kind of this, here's an example of what success really looks like. It's not this fork in the road choosing one path correctly or the other. It's a path of going from failure to failure to failure and learning from those experiences to really have some success building on that. It's just something that somebody threw up on Twitter. I mean, LinkedIn.
I have one more. Is that okay? Okay. You highlighted the importance of strong communication. I'm wondering if you could give us some advice regarding effective communication strategies in large, siloed organizations with a great variety of knowledge sets, interests, and disciplines.
In 2 minutes, please.
Yeah. I mean, I'll jump in right first. We're doing an ERP implementation, and you know what? University of Georgia is a big. Most people do not have a grasp of all the different facets of either a business or technical problem. So they've got their piece of that issue that they know really, really well, and then they don't have all the other pieces. And what naturally tends to happen in a resource-constrained environment, and time is a huge constraint on this project right now, is that we tend to make up really bad stuff about the stuff we don't know, and then we make assumptions about that. And what I have found is everybody does that in isolation from one another. We have these huge problems that we start talking about in email or talking about up the organization chart and stuff like that. When we just get people in the same room together and let everybody express their view from their perspective, most of the darn problems go away really, really quickly. So again, I believe in just flattening the collaboration and getting people in the same room together. And I think these problems tend to become more manageable, or they tend to become less of a problem when you actually bring everybody together around them. But that's tough to do the bigger the organization you are.
And I was going to say the same thing. Getting people to talk face to face to each other, I think, is the bottom line message.
Yeah. Email is the worst thing in the world for managing complex problems.
Absolute amen. And I would just add, there's a great book out called Tribal Leadership. It's really good for concepts for working across silos, so I can recommend that. Mm-hmm. Thank you all for coming.
Thank you all.